Welcome to Building the Future, hosted by Kevin Horick. With millions of listeners a month, Building the Future has quickly become one of the fastest rising programs, with a focus on interviewing startups, entrepreneurs, investors, CEOs, and more. The radio and TV show airs in 15 markets across the globe, including Silicon Valley. For full showtimes, past episodes, or to sponsor the show, please visit buildingthefutureshow.com.
Do you have an app idea that you've been dreaming about but don't know how to actually start building it? Use Bubble. I've been using Bubble for a number of years now. It's an extremely powerful no-code platform that enables you to build, launch, and scale real products without investing thousands of dollars on engineers, designers, or spending time trying to code it yourself. Use Bubble's visual drag-and-drop tool to create really anything from marketplaces, SaaS products, and so much more. Join over 2 million people, including myself, already using Bubble to launch and grow businesses.
Welcome back to the show. Today we have Bill Capuzzi. He's the CEO at Apex. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on the show. I think what you guys are doing at Apex is actually really innovative and cool. But maybe before we get into all that, let's get to know you a little bit better and start off with where you grew up.
Sure. I grew up in New Jersey, Very cool. Small town, it's kind of northwestern New Jersey. And lived there from the time I was about 3 until about 21.
Okay. Very cool. So walk us through, you went to university. What did you take and why?
So I came out of high school. I went to a small school in Connecticut called Wesleyan University, and it was a liberal arts school. So it wasn't a lot of different choices. And I had an affinity towards science. I liked to figure out how things worked. I like to kind of understand the sort of ergonomics of things. And so, and I had a sort of desire to go to med school. And so, you know, undergrad, okay, how do you get all the medical requirements done? How do I, you know, engage in classes that are interesting to me? I'm going to be an environmental science major. And so 4 years at Wesleyan, I came out the other side with a BA degree in environmental science.
Okay, interesting. Keep going.
Yeah. So, you know, you come out of school, you know, like I said, I wanted to go to med school. You know, like a lot of people, even today, I came out with a lot of debt, right?
So, sure. Yep.
You know, the question was, okay, how do I go to med school, take on even more debt on top of what I already had? So I said, okay, I'm going to work for a few years. I'm going to make some money. I'm going to pay down the loans that I have, and then I'll get to that med school thing, you know, down the road. So I came out, I went to work for an environmental engineering firm as a scientist. And I learned pretty quickly, I would say after the first 2 years, that my calling in life was not to be an environmental scientist.
Why was that?
I was on the road in a ton. I was out in the field, which was interesting. But it's my ability to actually have an impact. It was hard for me to see what I was doing was making the world a better place. And I was a young man working for this big company. And so I was a small fish in a gigantic pond. And so you also had sort of an interest and a desire to really do something and own something and, you know, create something. And so still didn't pay down the debt as much as I had wanted. And you know, what do you do? Right. So I'm 26 years old. I go and work at Rutgers University. And the reason I went to work at Rutgers University is because they had a program where if you worked there, you went to school for free.
Oh, interesting.
So I took over the alumni records department, of Rutgers University, and which was an amazing experience in and of itself. I had 12 all women, all over the age of 50, all were part of the union. So unionized a group of people that worked for me. This is the first time I had ever managed a person in my life. Wow. And here I am, 26 years old, managing a group of women that were my mom's age. So that was for sure an interesting experience, and kind of my first foray into managing people. But again, the crux of that and the amazing thing for that was I got to go to school for free. Sure. So I got my MBA, and now it's you know right before the turn of you know into 2000, and you know what do? I have an MBA, I have this environmental science degree, and I went to work in this MBA program. I got selected into this MBA program at this firm called DLJ, which from many people probably listening to this don't know what DLJ is, but it was an investment bank. It was Donaldson, Lufkin, Jenrette. It was an investment bank, private company, and it was an amazing culture, really a neat company. So I spent a year as part of their MBA program, and at the end you get selected. You either get asked to leave because they don't think that you're part of the long term for the firm, or you get selected to go work within some part of DLJ.
Okay.
And at the time, so I got selected to go work at this firm called Pershing. They owned this company called Pershing. It was in Jersey City, New Jersey. And we're talking 1999. Jersey City was not what it is today. It was a little scary, to be honest. And it was, Pershing was this bowels of our industry. So the rest of the MBA students were going to work in investment banking. They were doing merchant banking. They were working in trading. And I get selected to go to Jersey City, New Jersey, and work within the bowels of our industry, this clearing firm called Pershing. And again, at the time, I remember it saying, what did I do wrong? Why did I get selected or banished to the gulag, right, called Pershing? And you know, these things all tie together, right? So I had this desire as a young person to learn how things were, you know, sausage was made and how, you know, things connected with science. And Pershing was, as it turns out, sort of the original clearing firm for most of the U.S. trading and most of the retail business in our country at the time.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah. And so I learned how the system worked, you know, and I realized how broken the system actually was, how overly complex the infrastructure was, the embedded costs, the conflicts of interest. And this wasn't just Pershing. You know, this wasn't a Pershing issue. This is how the industry worked. And it really kind of lit that fire for me around, okay, there's a better way. That the back end of our industry, this investing industry, there's just a better way. So I left Pershing, helped start a company called ConvergeX in 2005. I led most of their technology, their international business. We did prime brokerage, options trading. I also managed the clearing business as part of this firm that I helped found, it called ConvergeX. And while I was there, I'll make the connection into Apex, there was this firm for sale called Apex. And it was back in 2015, right? So this is 10 years later after I helped found the company ConvergeX. This company, Apex, came for sale. And okay. I tried to buy it from the parent company, which is still the parent company today, Peak Six. And the reason for it was I knew it was this little tiny company, right? It had, let's call it a couple dozen clients. It supported roughly a little over a million end customers. But I knew what was, you know, go back to my Pershing days. I knew what it could be. So I tried to buy the company from Peak Six. I was unsuccessful in buying it. But Matt and Jenny, who are the founders of Peak Six, were successful in convincing me to come across. And here I sit almost 10 years later, really really changed the industry, really from the bottom up. And we can get into exactly Apex is doing, but it really is around building a better way, right? How investing should work really through the lens of B2B.
Okay, sure. So maybe let's step back. So when you bought or tried to buy Apex, it became a board Apex. What was it doing? And then walk us through its journey to what Apex is doing today.
Yeah, sure. So there's a little bit more to the story that I'll add. So Peak Six, the parent company, acquired the assets of a company called Penson, which was a public company at the time, and ran into major issues. And Penson was effectively what's called a clearing firm, a custodian. And they supported a whole bunch of different clients, but they didn't really, they got spread way too thin. They supported this new fintech world. They supported international. They supported what's called prime brokerage. And they didn't have the right risk controls in place to manage what they were doing. And again, from my time at Pershing, I'll tell you, I learned a lot about how to manage risk. So Peak Six stepped in and bought the assets, formed Apex, and they owned it about a year and realized, hey, we don't really know how to run a clearing business. We really need somebody that really understands, either sell it or let's try and find somebody that really understands what this could be. And so they tried to sell it, which is when I stepped in and said, hey, I'll buy it from you, because I knew what it could be. And through my conversations with the two founders, you know, we just really kind of clicked, right? And they were really interested in this notion of making sort of this world of investing frictionless for everyone. And the bones, the structure of that failed Penson that I stepped into back in 2015 was already supporting the likes of people like Wealthfront and Betterment, people like Scottrade that no longer exists. So there were a number of firms that were already in that ecosystem of Penson into Apex, early Apex, that were looking at the world of investing through a different lens. And were looking for a partner in Apex that was going to take out as much friction from the system as possible. All right. And again, I knew what was possible from my time at Pershing. And so I stepped in as CEO. Again, there was very few clients, very few end clients that we supported. And just to give you some sense, let's call it, there's 1.5 million clients, end clients that we supported back in 15. Today, we're at close to 25 million.
Wow.
So there's been really massive.
That's huge.
Yeah, really massive growth. What's that?
In 10 years, that's huge.
Yeah, it's a lot of hard work, but you know, I think the premise of the company, the purpose of the company is to help every person on the planet invest. And not too surprising, when you look at the profile of the customers, those 25 million customers that we support, it's largely, Kevin, it's largely young people, and the accounts are small. Right. Okay. Versus if you were to look at what was at Penn or at Schwab or Fidelity today, we're a fraction. The account average account size is a fraction of what a typical advisory account would look like.
Right. Interesting. Okay. So how does somebody use Apex, or how does that kind of work? Like, can I just start using Apex? Do I have to go to an institution that uses Apex? Walk us through that.
Yeah. So we're purely B2B company, right? Okay. Which means that there is some company that's going to use Apex to support Kevin, the end customer. Okay.
Got it.
And they come in really broadly speaking, two forms. They either come to us as what's called a registered investment advisor. So think an advisory firm that's going to provide passive investment solutions, right, to you.
Okay.
So think Betterment as a good example, right? Betterment is an advisor.
Okay.
Or they're going to come in the form of what's called a broker dealer, right? And effectively, largely speaking, dealers are offering the ability for you to buy and sell individual securities or fixed income instruments or options or cryptocurrency. And what Apex does behind the scenes is allow them to bring that amazing experience to life. All right. So if you were to go on and open an account at Stash or Webull or SoFi or Goldman Sachs Marcus, the investing side, the back end of what's happening in terms of that UI experience is Apex. So we do the account opening, the instant account opening, the funding of those accounts, so the funding rails, all of the trading, like I said, whether it's an equity, an option, fixed income, cryptocurrency, mutual fund, we'll do all of the cost basis, tax reporting, the statements, the confirms, all of the settlement of all of those shares, everything that happens sort of behind the scenes. Think of us as this platform that packages that up and provides that in a as best as possible frictionless way.
Got it. Okay, very cool. So you said something earlier, though, is that you're trying to level the playing field to basically let anybody invest. Is that correct, or am I mistaken?
That's right.
Speaking there? Okay. So if I can't use the platform directly, how are you doing that?
Yeah. And this is the beauty of Apex and our partnership with the firms that we support.
Okay.
It is truly a symbiotic relationship, right? So the purpose of Apex, help every person on the planet invest. Well, I don't have direct end customers, but what my job is to, partner up with, let's pick on SoFi.
Sure.
To create this amazing experience for Kevin, right? Okay. You want to go on their app, you want to use their tools, you want to maybe pay down your student loan, you want to buy some passive investment in, have a 401k or an IRA account at SoFi. Maybe you want to buy some cryptocurrency. So their job is to make that experience amazing for you, the end customer. My job is to provide the plumbing, that platform that sits beneath them. So think sort of, the Shopify of investing. Think right. The Twilio of investing. Got of it. Sorts, which is, our job is to effectively allow for SoFi to do this and do it for people that, are frankly the undesirables in the investing world, right? So, if you walk into a traditional advisor today in the United States, typically their minimum account size is somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million.
Yeah, which is
not. Think about how many people in our country can actually, you're talking writing a check for $500,000 and saying, here, just invest this. This is investable money. This isn't net worth. This is like writing a check. How many people can do that? Right.
Yeah. There's a lot less people that can't do that.
And that's right. Right. And so part for us is how do you wring out all of the friction? So that someone can show up and invest $100, right? $1,000. Yep. And we can do that in a, sort of on-brand way. So that end customer, typically a young person, it's sort of akin to what their lives are like, sort of using their phones through an app. And then two is do it profitably, right? Which, right. Go back to the traditional players, from a competitive standpoint, this is where the Pershings, the Fidelities, the Schwabs, even if they wanted to try and support that cohort of people, they just can't because of the infrastructure that's in place at those firms.
Got it. That makes total sense. So how do you do that? Because like take the $100 example, it's probably not worth the banker's time to do that. So how are you making it worth their time?
Well, it can be, right? So, okay. So there's two parts. One is, let's just take you, Kevin. To the extent that SoFi puts their app out there and says, okay, it's here for you, right? Okay. And you're going to do all of the work to set that up. There's not a Got person it. Involved, right?
So okay. That's the
you're yeah. typing in your name and your account and, or your address and your social security number. right? You're doing the work to make the connection between your Bank of America account, let's say, or Citibank, and this account. You're doing all the work to make the connections happen. What we're doing behind the scenes is making it happen seamlessly, right? Yeah, so when you press the button, the account immediately opens, right? No friction, no paperwork. And then the goal is for Kevin to continue investing.
Right.
So to your point, if all we ended up with is you took $100, put in this account, that's the last time you ever put any money in it. Great. Maybe it becomes 110, 120, right? This is that premise on, hey, people should be investing even if it's small amounts because it compounds.
Yeah.
But the goal is for Kevin to continue dollar cost averaging, right? To continue to put money into this account over time and build wealth. And so you start small and the premise here, we go back to the symbiotic relationship. This is where the job of the SoFis or the Publix or the Betterments is to engage with Kevin, the end customer, and teach you how to properly invest, which means keep putting money in over time. And our job is to make that all happen in a really seamless way.
Got it. Okay. No, that makes total sense. So I'm curious then, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here. Traditionally, I think it's getting a lot better, but banking apps aren't necessarily known to be the best kind of user experience. So how are you fixing and changing that? Because if your target market is somebody that's going to use it on their phone, you need to nail the experience.
Totally agree. Yeah, look, I mean, you know, and it's still there today, you know, the experience today, what I call is up, over, and down.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is, okay, you have a banking world, right? Think me as an individual. I have a banking app with my checking and my savings account. I have my investing accounts. I maybe have some loans. And today, it's all up, over, and down, up, over, and down to connect the dots. And it's better than it was, but it's certainly not, like you said, a great experience. Where Apex does step in, and let's use Ally as a good example. Ally is a client of Apex. Connecting the dots between the banking part of Ally and the investing part, and making it such, Kevin, if you're a banking client of Ally, you can very seamlessly press a button and move money across in both directions between investing and banking. And make it look like one versus the up, over, down, right? Another example is Goldman Sachs, right? So the banking part of, you know, Goldman Sachs Marcus and the investing part, Apex provides the ability to actually move money and what's called journaling real time between the two kind of silos, right? Or the swim lanes. Our job is to make that happen. Obviously, it has to be done safely, securely, has to follow all the rules in our industry. But our job is to make that happen real time and make it feel like it's a sort of, the experience for the end customer is seamless.
No, that makes sense. So then are you actually building the app for your client, or they're basically integrating with Apex and you guys have a bunch of APIs and services? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, it's a great question. Predominantly, we're an API shop, right?
Okay, so got it.
This goes back to that symbiotic relationship. The last thing I want to be involved in is changing screen colors and being involved in that sort of end client experience.
Right.
We're great at plumbing. We're great at bringing these things to life. So by and large, everything Apex does is via real-time API.
Got it. Okay. Very cool. Which actually saves them a ton of time and effort in dev cost.
Totally.
And never mind all the other stuff that surrounds that, right? But yeah.
That's just right.
And you can correct me if I'm wrong here. The stuff I've done in banking before, they're like, well, we need to release this, like, stupid, maybe this is a stupid example, but I think it can get my point across. Is they're like, well, we need to release, you know, face unlock for phones, but it's going to take us, you know, 5 years because that's just where we're at. It's like, well, no, like you need to launch that in like 6 months because 5 years from now, who knows if Face Unlock is going to be a thing. It might be something totally different, or it still might be here. Like, it's just unacceptable to roll out a feature in years from now.
Yeah, and I would even say, you mentioned 6 months. I mean, we think in weeks.
Okay, you know, even better.
Maybe
right?
Even in months, single digit, you know, sort of 1 to 2 months, just even to launch. You know, take all of our APIs, you know, someone can launch an investment product in this new world of embedded finance, right? The ability to leverage an Apex and be able to stand up an investment solution, it should happen in somewhere between a month and two.
And the other is almost unheard of, correct? Sorry to cut you off. Is like, it's unheard of in the banking industry. I would even argue most industries, but banking is very slow.
Yeah, we're kind of we are a one of one for sure as a company.
Got it.
And you know, look, this all happens, you know, it's also an incredibly regulated environment, right? So you have the SEC, you have FINRA, you have the OCC, DTCC, which I'm on the board. And that comes with Apex, right? So it's not just amazing technology. I think the moat around Apex in part is obviously the technology we just talked about, but it's also providing the ability to sort of, you know, sort of a solution that navigates through all of the crazy Byzantine rules that sort of, you know, persist throughout this investing world, right? So we don't cut corners, we dot every I, we cross every T as it relates to the regulations. And that comes as part of this package, right? Again, which you take this great technology and you marry it up with literally hundreds of years of experience in this kind of bowels of investing, the SEC world, the FINRA world, right? The CFTC world, all of that comes as part of this B2B package that we offer.
Got it. Okay. Very cool. So then how do you guys monetize the platform? Do you charge like a subscription model? Is it per access, a bit of both? Walk us through that.
It's a bit of both, right? And so, okay, you know, as part of this regulated world, we act as both this sort of B2B SaaS platform and this regulated, what's called a custodian. And so I'm holding, so Kevin goes on to public or stash, you open an account, you move money over into this investment account. Apex is actually holding your money and or the things you invest in. And so we're safeguarding those assets for you, right? It's what's called fully disclosed. You're on the books of Apex. And our job is not just to be the SaaS provider, but actually be the regulated entity that the SEC would look at as protecting Kevin's money. And so your question about, okay, so then how do you make money? Part of it is a subscription fee for leveraging the platform. And then the second part of it is through transactions. So when you make a trade, you move money in and out, you generate a confirm or a statement, there are transactional fees that we would charge to our B2C counterpart, right? So the Betterments, the Stashes, the Weebles, those firms would pay us either subscription and or transactional fee. And roughly speaking, you can kind of think of, you know, our revenue streams today, it's roughly 60% subscription, roughly 40% transactional.
Got it. Okay. Interesting. That makes a lot of sense. So I want to dive a little bit deeper into one thing you mentioned. So when Apex is holding the money, is that for like, how does that work? So are you guys basically almost like a bank in yourself? And I could be wrong with this comparison, but is that why Robinhood had to stop trading, or what the claim they had to stop trading when the Bitcoin thing was going crazy a couple years ago, where they basically said they like ran out of money? Is that the same thing, different? Like, how does that work for you guys?
There are two different things. I'll explain both. So,
okay, sure.
The first is, do we act as a bank? Not in the way where you have a checking or savings account, but if you move money out of your, let's just say you're a banking customer of Citibank,
Okay.
You move it out of your checking account into this brokerage account that's you know, under sort of the banner of SoFi.
Okay. Yeah.
That cash sits in what's called a brokerage account, and Apex is the custodian of that account.
Okay.
And the two things that are going to sit in that account, it's either going to be cash or it's going to be securities, right? And will support and safeguard both. When there's cash in the account, there's interest that's earned on that cash. So in that respect, it kind of looks like, you know, sort of a bank-like product, but it's under this world of brokerage and not under the world of. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. Okay.
The second question, go back to the meme stock issues back in 2021 with Robinhood, who, by the way, Robinhood started with Apex, was a client of Apex. We helped spawn that firm, which I'm proud of, you know, back to the point around, you know, democratizing investing and helping every person on the planet. Robinhood decided to do what Apex does themselves.
Got it.
Which was a mistake, right? And of course, I'm going to say that as a CEO, but, you know, they've run into a lot of issues, most notably what you just described, which is the issues that they have around meme stock. And what happened there was it wasn't about customer cash. Like, your customer cash at Robinhood was protected. It was that the way that the industry works for buying and selling securities is that that firm, the custodian, actually has to have enough cash, their own cash on hand, to settle those trades versus whoever was on the other side. If you bought stock, there's someone that sold, right?
Right.
And there's an industry utility called DTCC, where I mentioned before I'm on the board of, that sits in between buyers and sellers. But what you need to have is enough cash owned by the custodian, in this case, Robinhood, to facilitate the amount of buying and selling that you're doing. And what happened for Robinhood is they did not have cash. They did not have enough liquidity that was owned by Robinhood to facilitate the amount of activity that they were doing. So effectively, what the industry, in this case DTCC, looked at and said, you are doing way too much business relative to the amount of capital, cash, liquidity, whatever words you want to use, that Robinhood, the company, had in their bank account. And that created this massive problem for them. That created, over that course of that weekend, that they had to go out and raise, with, you know, public information, they had to literally go raise $6 billion to be able to support the amount of activity that they were doing on behalf of retail customers.
Got it. So if they never moved away from you guys, would you have solved that problem?
Yeah, we would have solved the problem. That's our job. That's one of the things. It's not just about SaaS. It's a really complicated industry. And this is why we're a one of one. It's like, okay, we can open accounts in seconds. We can do real-time funding. We can send out electronic conference. We do all this stuff really cool tech-wise. But at the core, you actually also need to know how to, you know, manage collateral, how to manage treasury, how to support all these things that are happening behind the scenes in our industry. And, oh, by the way, follow all the rules. That's really hard to do.
Sure.
Especially last thing I was going to say is, especially this is that symbiotic relationship I talked about. Robinhood should focus on building an amazing experience for the end customer. Leave all this plumbing to somebody else, right? And this is why you see the likes of the SoFis and, you know, the clients of Apex today really having successes, because they're leaning hard into their sweet spot, which is the B2C client experience, the UI, the UX experience, and leaving this stuff, the plumbing, to Apex to take care of.
Interesting. No, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Interesting. Well, and the other thing too is just in your case, then, is you can handle if a client or customer blows up, like in a good way. I mean, like if they get really, really popular and all of a sudden you have the infrastructure to support that, right? Where as somebody that's built software, like that can be very, very challenging to scale up almost instantly.
That's right. If you tried to do this yourself, Kevin, as you scale and, like you said, blow up, it obviously requires additional kind of focus and attention and build.
Yeah.
But it also requires more capital to be able 100%. To support this business.
Yeah.
And the one cool thing for us is that we build something once and we provide it to every one of our customers, right? The challenge for somebody like a Robinhood today is that every time they're building something, it's to keep up with Apex. Because what we do is we'll build retirement accounts. We'll give it to all 300 of our customers to be able to offer retirement accounts. Then Robinhood has to build those things one off for their business, right?
Fair enough. No, that makes sense. Interesting. And then, yeah, then they become more loyal to you. And it's actually a really smart business from your guys' angle of like, once you're in, you can upsell them till forever, really. And they're never going to go anywhere because it would take forever for them to build it all themselves.
Yeah, it just doesn't make a lot of sense, right? If we're smart around pricing, if we're fair in terms of how that pricing works, you go back to the, you know, overuse the word symbiotic relationship, but it's hey, you focus on what you're great at, we'll focus on what we're great at, and together we'll do something amazing, right? And so I'm really proud sitting in the seat for my team that, you know, the Apex team, you know, we had a little over a million clients in 2015. We fast forward 2023, there's 25 million people that we're supporting. Like that's
awesome.
It's awesome, right?
Yeah, that's totally. Well, most companies never get that kind of success and scale, right?
Yeah.
Especially but in we're that just short getting period
started.
Of time.
I mean, think about, okay, so yes, you know, pat myself on the back. Great, great team effort, Apex, 25 million people. But then you think about how many people on the planet today don't have an investment account, have not saved a dollar towards their towards their future, have not invested a single dollar. And the numbers are staggering, right? So I'll just give you one statistic. Roughly 2% of Indians, country of India, roughly 2% have an investment account.
Oh, wow.
98% of the people in India have never invested a dollar.
Wow.
Right. And so the opportunity is great. Yeah. 25 million, everyone would be proud. You think that there's literally hundreds and hundreds of millions of people out there that, you know, are still needing our help. Right. And so the purpose of Apex is alive and well, and, you know, the path is, next time, Kevin, we talk in a few years, the number is not 25, it's 50 or 100 million end customers.
That's actually a perfect segue into my next question for you. How does Apex support companies outside of, you know, the US or North America? And it's sounds like you're working, if it doesn't already work, kind of globally or a lot of places in the world.
Yeah, it does. So it's funny. It's probably the largest growing segment of Apex is firms outside of the U.S. that want to, you know, get access to the U.S. market, right? So 100%. We can settle trades all over the world, but not too surprising. Most people outside of this country want to invest in the U.S. markets.
100%.
And so the vast majority of what we do in terms of our international business is to help companies outside of the US provide the ability for their clients to access the US markets. So I'll give you a good example.
Sure.
Itaú, which is one of the largest banks in Brazil, has this massive, customer base, all Brazilian nationals. And what they're doing with Apex is taking our APIs, building it into their banking product in Portuguese, and allowing for customers, just like I talked about with Ally, doing it for their Brazilian national clients, people sitting down in Sao Paulo or, you know, Rio, opening accounts within the Itaú world, and being able to take Brazilian real, move it to dollars, and invest in fractional shares of Tesla, right? So somebody wants to spend $200 and buy $200 of Tesla, they can do that. And it's all happening through the Itto front end, and the back end is Apex.
Very cool. How, like, if I say in your $200 example there, how quick can you make that transaction?
I mean, it's instantaneous, right?
Okay, so it's not like days, I guess is what I'm getting at. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's so the trade is done instantaneous, right? You put in and say, I want to buy $200 worth of Tesla. The industry, the U.S. industry, settles trades on what's called T+2, right? That's back through that industry utility called DTCC. So what happens is, which is, you know, this gives you some sense of how backwards, how much work we still have, I should say. But today you buy, you have the cash sitting in your account. So let's just say you had $200 in the account. You buy $200 worth of Tesla. You actually have to wait 2 business days until you actually get the stock, even if you had the money. Because the industry is still built upon old COBOL mainframe batch systems. And it's funny because we didn't talk much about crypto. And there's lots of not great things happening in the world of crypto. One part I would tell you is that the infrastructure, if you know, you just stick to the pure blockchain, cryptocurrency trades 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and settles real time.
Right.
So the infrastructure in of itself for crypto, right, is what, frankly, we should be aspiring for in the world of equities and options, for that matter.
100%.
And we'll get there. We'll get there. It'll take years. The challenge is not, you know, it's not the apex. Is I could settle that trade real time with you in equities now. Right. The issue is that the industry, right, the Bank of New York's, the, you know, the JP Morgan's, the Citibank's, the big banks, especially in the United States, are all built on old COBOL IBM mainframe that works in a batch way.
Which is wild to me, but it is what it is, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. Interesting. No, that's really cool. That's going to be game changing, right?
It should be. I mean, think about it just through the lens of a retail investor. It's like, I want to buy stock now and I want to sell stock, you know, tomorrow. Today, you have to sort of wait for transactions to settle 2 days to get the money to then buy something else. It sort of defies logic. There's strong push from the likes of people like me and, you know, the rest of the leadership at Apex to push this industry towards that type of environment. It's like I said, if you just look at the crypto world, it's totally doable. The only reason crypto can do it and the equities can is because crypto started by and large, whatever it is, 5 years ago. And so you weren't saddled with all this legacy crap. In terms of how, you know, sort of equities are settled today. So it's just going to take longer, largely, like I said, because the traditional players, you know, the big traditional players in this, you know, this industry are, you know, are still built on old technology.
Interesting. So you guys put out a quarterly report. Do you want to talk about that and what exactly is in that?
Yeah, sure. So we put out a quarterly report, and like I said, pretty neat, right? So we have, you know, roughly 25 million end investors, and it's they've gotten a little bit older. When we started this, they were in their 20s. When we started this report, they were in their 20s. They're now in their early 30s, but it's squarely millennial and Gen Z. Right, is the vast majority of people that use Apex as the, you know, that platform. So there's roughly, let's call it 6 million Gen Z, and there's another whatever it is, 10, 15 million of millennials. And what we look at is what are they investing in? What are they buying? What are they selling? how does what they're buying and selling look versus what the broader market's looking like. And I think a couple of broad themes over the course of the last, let's call it 2 years, and we'll tie it into sort of financial literacy. People are, you know, these young people are learning how to properly invest. And what I thought was really cool is that even though the market sold off massively in 22, and for most of these people that are on Apex's platform, it's the first time they've ever seen this, right? Because yeah. It's kind of been up and to the right for the last 10 years, right?
Sure.
Since 2018 or 2008. And so what did they do, right? And, you know, sort of the traditional advisors said was going to happen is, oh, people are going to sell because they don't really know what they're doing, and they're going to run to cash and they're going to move it all over into some traditional advisor. And that's exactly what didn't happen. What people did was, like I said before, dollar cost average. People put more money in to their investment accounts and found opportunities with the market down to dollar cost average. We also saw, which I think is interesting, is people move from stock picking to more passive investment strategies. And you know, I'll give you my two cents on that. I think you really didn't have to know much to pick a stock, and it was probably going to go up in 2020, 2021.
Okay.
So people thought they were geniuses picking stock. And what happened in 22 is stocks reverted, right? They went down. Yeah. And what people did is, we saw a lot of young people do, is move from a stock picking solution to something where they took the $1,000 and put it in a more passive portfolio, sort of a managed account of sorts, where it was, let's just say it was the S&P 500 ETF fund, and less about picking individual stocks.
Right. Interesting.
So we do this every quarter. And, again, like I said, the whole premise of it is, I think, we're one of one. We have this massive number of clients. We certainly have a representative sample set. And the whole premise of putting it out there is to really kind of get people, especially young folks, to read this about, okay, what is someone that looks like me doing? And again, at a very macro level, is teach people what proper investing looks like.
That was going to be my next question to you, is like, it's interesting because there's certain things that are taught in school that I've never used a day in my life and probably never will. And something like financial literacy, arguably you use all day, every day, whether you're like doing actively things or not, right? Like you're thinking about it. And so the fact that it's not taught boggles my mind.
Yeah.
And so I guess the caveat to that question is like, you keep reading online that millennials, and I'm almost 40, so I'm like a geriatric millennial, that like millennials and Gen Z are just not where their parents were at this time in life. Is that true? Is it just things are different now? Like, what are your thoughts and what have you seen related to kind of literacy and where generations are these days? Because you're in the trenches building this stuff and you actually know.
Yeah. So here's what I'd say. And you said you're on the geriatric side of millennials. I mean, when you were 21 years old, coming out of college, 22 years old, you didn't have any, like, what were your choices? If you had $100, $200, $500, there was zero choices for you.
Yeah.
Because no one wanted you. And even if they did, you would take your $200 and immediately, you would have gotten commissioned to death, right? You would have bought three trades and your money would have all been gobbled up in commission.
Sure.
So fast forward 2023, what's amazing is that we've done great things to provide access, right? Yep. And so you can take that same $200, you can buy fractional shares of stock. There's zero commission, and the access is in your fingertips. That's amazing, right? The progress we've made. You know, the challenge I would tell you, and the thing that I think our industry didn't do a good job through the pandemic, most of what we focused on was building all of this amazing infrastructure, all this amazing access to the markets. The financial literacy that goes along with it that should have been there is sort of playing catch up now. So think of an inchworm, right? The front of the inchworm moved forward through the pandemic in terms of access, properly teaching people how to invest, whether it's in the schools or through the apps or through any of the things that we talked about, is sort of the back of the inchworm. It's finally starting to catch up, but it wasn't there through a lot of this. And so one of the things that we did within the Peak Six Apex family is we acquired a company in 2021 called Zogo, Z-O-G-O. And for the people listening, you can download the app Zogo. And it's basically next generation financial education app. And the whole premise there is, okay, we have an obligation as Apex. We have an obligation as the operators in this industry, not just Apex, to teach, right? To teach people what is a bank account. What is, what is a brokerage account, right? What is an RIA? What is passive investment? What is active investment? And, I have four children, and their dad runs this company called Apex. So all the stuff, amazing stuff we just talked about. And I'm embarrassed to admit, like, they're not where they should be in terms of literacy. And so, part of that is we got to continue to lean in, and through things like Zogo, but also through all of these kind of business, B2C companies, is pair access and tools with education, right? So, make it maybe a bad analogy. You have a loaded gun, you got to give somebody the instruction manual on how to use the gun properly, right? Because if not, you can shoot yourself in the foot. And I think we have a bunch of work as an industry to do that. I also think, frankly, that the schools have an obligation also to take advantage of all these things like Zogo and make it much more of the curriculum. Let's just take high schoolers. Because of all this access, kids can invest a lot sooner than, 20 years ago. It shouldn't just be some weird elective that, some kids can take. It really has to be part of the curriculum to teach people how to properly manage their money, not just investing, but actually how to manage their money. And so, again, get off my soapbox, but this is a place where I think we got to continue as an industry, right? The fintech community, all the people you're talking, that are listening to this, we have lots of work to do, right? To continue to sort of lean in and teach people how to properly manage their money, right? And in my case, how to properly invest their money.
Nope. Makes total sense. But Bill, sadly, we're out of time. I feel like we could go on another hour or so. But how about you close with mentioning where people can get more information about yourself, Apex, and any other links you want to mention?
Yeah, sure. So our website is apexfintechsolutions.com. My LinkedIn is William Capuzzi. Last name is Capuzzi. For those listening that are startups that are looking to add investing, love to have the conversation. For those that do things someplace else in the continuum of fintech that want to figure out how to connect the dots, those are really fun conversations for me and for us as a company. So I look forward to hopefully having some of those conversations with the folks listening.
Very cool. Well, Bill, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to be on the show, and I look forward to keeping in touch with you, and have a good rest of your day, man.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Please visit our website at buildingthefutureshow.com to join the free community, sign up for our newsletter, or to sponsor the show. The music is done by Electric Mantra. You can check him out at electricmantra.com. And keep building the future.